Someone asked that we speak about how it is that one can get around the halacha of Yerusha, the halachas of Yerusha in the Torah, that nowadays when someone dies, you would expect that their daughter should get something, you would expect that the Bechara should not necessarily get twice as much as everybody else. So is there any way around those halachas of Yerusha that we have in the Torah? So the Torah tells us in Sefer Bamidbar Perek of Zayin that if a person dies, essentially the Torah says the son yarshins. If he doesn't have a son, we know from the Slavcha the daughter yarshins. If he doesn't have a son or a daughter, his brother's yarshin. If he has neither son nor daughter nor brothers, his father's brother's yarshin. Notice who it left out on the list. Goes to his father's brothers, never mentioned anything about the father. The Gemara fills that in. But and then you just go to the closest relative. So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah explains that the father is really the third in the line after the sons and daughters. It's sons, daughters, fathers, then brothers, then father's brothers. So it's the father actually sneaks in there, even though he doesn't appear in the Torah on the list. That is the din in the Torah. The Torah in Devarim Perek Chaf Aleph tells us that a bechor gets a double portion, gets pishnayim from the other siblings. So that means if a person has four sons, he divides his Yerusha into, he divides his estate, or this estate gets divided into five parts. The oldest son gets two of those parts, which would mean he gets 40%. And each of the other three sons get 20% of the estate. An amazingly inequitable distribution of the estate. But that's the din in the Torah. Now, a Bechar has to be a Bechar that's not born by C-section. If he's born by C-section, the Mishnah Bechara says he's not a Bechar Liyerusha. So my Bechar, my son, wouldn't anyway get Pishnayim. He was born by C-section. The Bechar, it only takes Pishnayim B'ra'ui, not B'muchzak, not B'ra'ui. It has to be something that you are in possession of, not something that somebody owes you. If, let's say, someone owes you money, a person dies, and someone owed him money, and they pay $10,000 that they owed him, so the Bechar doesn't get Pishnayim in that. So the din of Pishnayim are not so clear cut that it's that the Bechor is always going to get twice as much as everybody else. But nevertheless, that is the din midaraisa, that a Bechor typically is going to get Pishnayim. The other din midaraisa is that a daughter doesn't get anything. Now, when we say that she doesn't get anything, it's not that, meaning she doesn't get anything when there is a son. Only when there are no sons does a daughter get anything. So when we say she doesn't get anything, what that means is the Mishnah Ksuvos we learned last year tells us that an unmarried daughter gets 10% of the estate that's supposed to be used for her dowry. So she gets an automatic 10%, which might which might be a significant amount of money, but still she doesn't get Yerusha like normal Yerusha. That's the din Mida Oraisa. The Rambam in Hilchos Nachlos, in Parag Vav of Hilchos Nachlos, when he talks about Yerusha, right in the middle of Hilchos Nachlos, he starts saying, you know, Chazal teach us, Al Yishana Adam Ben Ben Abanim, that you shouldn't treat children differently from each other, every child should be treated with respect, every child should be equal, and, you know, there shouldn't be jealousy and kinna and competition amongst the children. So it's been pointed out, the Achronim point out, very strange for the Rambam, in the middle of Hilchos Nachlos. Okay, Hilchos Deos is one thing. Hilchos Nachlos gives me a whole Musar Shmuz, how to do parenting. So what the Rambam's trying to tell you, Rabbi Willig likes to point out, is that when it comes to Yerusha, the Rambam's saying this is ripe for Machlokas. Yerusha is ripe for Machlokas. People always fight about Yerushas. Avoid it at all costs. Figure out a way that there's not going to be any Machlokas. And for that reason, it's very important that people see to it that they try to make sure that there's as fair a distribution of their estate as possible. Many of the contemporary poskim recommend that a parent should never tell a child what he plans on leaving him. This is going to be yours after I die. That could be, write it in the will. Don't tell the child. Why? Because what's going to happen? They're going to write it in the will, and the child's going to say, "Well, no, Mom told me that I'm supposed to get that piece of jewelry. So I remember she told me." There should never be any sort of conflict between what was said orally and what was written. So just don't say anything orally. Put it all in the will. Now, the problem is, does a will work? Meaning, are you allowed to go against what the Torah says? The Torah says that you have to give Pishnayim to the Bechor, and if there are sons, daughters get nothing. So how do you get around that? L'chala Deos, every contemporary posek in the world, from the most Haredi to the most modern Orthodox, says that you should not follow the Dinei Yerusha. You need to do a workaround. You need to do an end around somehow. You have to, because you can't end up giving a Bechor Pishnayim, because it's going to cause such machlokas in the family. Families are torn apart about the smallest amounts of money sometimes when it comes to Yerusha, certainly if you're going to give Pishnayim. And to give a daughter nothing, families will be torn apart by it. All the poskim say this. Rabbi Willock said that when his parents passed away, he told his father, before his father passed away, when you write will, I do not want a penny more than my brother, my sisters either. Not a penny more than any of my siblings. Because it's just, it will rip apart the family. The question is, what's the way around it? How do you get around it? So this is a major discussion in the poskim. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, Nigros Moshe of Nezer Chelikal of Simon Kuf Dalid, where he says that if you have a will that is legal in American law, then it's halachically valid, and everyone gets to take what they get. How's that shaykh? Normally the halachs of Yerusha kick in as soon as the person dies, so already the Yarshim get their claims to the money. So how can you do a will, which what a will does, is it keeps everything in the estate. Nothing goes anywhere, and then once from the estate, it then gets divided to the right people. The executor of the estate is going to then make sure that it gets given to the right people. But it's too late. Yerusha already kicked in. So Rav Moshe holds that since when you write the will, you know for sure that it's going to, that legally it sets this process in motion where things are going to get divided. It's as if you've preempted, it's as if you've done a kinyan before the death, before the Misa. And that comes before the dinim of Yerusha kick in. That was Rav Moshe Shita. Most of the poskim strongly reject Rav Moshe Shita. They say that it doesn't work that way. There's no way that just writing a secular will is going to be good enough to upend dinim of Yerusha. And the raya they bring is from a Gemara Maseches Temura and Daf Chafei Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that when there's any sort of conflict between your own instructions of what you want to happen and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's instructions of what he wants to happen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's instructions win out. For example, the Gemara says if a person says that his Bechor animal should be a Korban Olah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously designates that the Bukhar is a Bukhar, has the status of a Bukhar, which is brought as a Karban, but it's not a Karbanola. Whose will wins out? What's the status of that Bukhar? The Gemara says explicitly, it's a Bukhar, it's not an Ola. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be a Bukhar. You can't just decide, I want it to be something else. So that's the raya that they bring against Rav Moshe Shita, to suggest Rav Moshe Shita is incorrect. There are a whole bunch of other possibilities that are suggested in terms of how to get around the halachos of Yerusha, but let's go cut straight to the one that's used and that certainly works. It should be pointed out that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky holds in Emes Yaakov and Shulchan Aruch that even though, strictly speaking, a person is not obligated to follow a secular will, but you know that if a parent wrote a secular will and they determined that this should go to that person, that should, you know that was the ratzon of your parents. So he says it's a good chumran kibud aveim to follow that. Now, you have to be very careful, though. To just follow its stam is not so pashut, because that's geneva for the people who are getting what they're not supposed to get. So the way you would have to do it is you'd have to do a kinyan to entitle, to gift over what you're supposed to get, and then you're not getting. Let's say you're a Bukhar, and your parent wrote in the will that you get the same as everybody else. So halachically, you're really supposed to get pishnayim in that situation. We don't pass on like Rav Moshe. You're supposed to get pishnayim. So Rabbi Yaakov says, okay, so then after the parent dies, make a kinyan and give bimatana whatever extra that you got to the rest of your siblings. You have to do it b'derech kinyan, b'derech matana, in order that it shouldn't be a problem of geneva by the siblings. But anyway, so how do we get around it? So the way we get around it is as follows. There's something called the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. The Ramah in Evan Ezra, Simon Kuf Yud Gimel, and Chosha Mishpat, Simon Reish Pei Aleph, discusses this concept of Shtar Chatzi Zachar. Basically, what Shtar Chatzi Zachar does is that the father obligates himself at the time of his daughter's wedding, as part of the Nadunya, part of the dowry he gives his daughter, is that he's going to pay her a large sum of money, a sum of money that is bigger than his entire estate. Let's say his estate is $1 million. He writes a Shtar that I hereby owe my daughter $1.5 million. Elamai, he makes a tenai that it's only going to be chal 1 hour before he dies, and the father includes another tenai that the debt is not going to be chal if the people who halachically yarshin him will give her a share of the Yerusha that's equal to theirs. So he makes it a tenai in the gift that he gives his daughter, I gift to you $1.5 million of my $1 million that I have. Elamai, that gift should be void if your brothers give you the same amount that they get, Yerusha. And that way the girl can get Yerusha, and the brothers will not get any more than the daughters. And that's a viable workaround for the dinim of Yerusha. Now, you have to be careful. It shouldn't be, he has a million-dollar estate, and he says, I hereby gift to you $1 billion. Because then you get into asmachta issues. Come on, was he kidding? Was he serious? That he knew that there was never going to be $1 billion in the estate. So that you have to be careful how exactly you do it. Obviously, all these things should be done in careful consultation with a rav and with probably with a lawyer as well. But that's how the shtar chatzi zachar works. Katzos points out we use a shtar shalem zachar, which uses the same mechanism, but it gives the girl instead. The way the shtar chatzi zachar work would be only if the boys give the daughters, give the girls a half of their yerusha, half of a share of yerusha. Katzos points out it works the same if you give a full share of the yerusha, and that's what we do. We don't do it at the time a girl gets married. We do it as a supplement to the will, and that's good enough. So you may have to do a kinyan again. You need to get a rav and a lawyer involved to figure out exactly how to do it properly. Now, it should be pointed out that many of the poskim suggest, even though we no longer follow the dinim of Yerusha, you should at least have a token of the dinim of Yerusha. For instance, a guy dies and he has $100,000 in the estate. So $99,000 he should do shtar chatzi zachar, shtar shalim zachar, whatever, to make sure that everyone gets the same amount. Leave $1,000 for dinim of Yerusha. Won't cost too much fighting, leave $500, whatever it is, some small amount, just to allow the dinim of Yerusha to still take effect in some way. Rav Shechter pointed out, it's similar to what Rav Avadia quotes in the Tshuva. All this information I'm getting, by the way, from Rabbi Jachter in Great Matter, Volume 3, but it's similar to what Rav Avadia writes in the Tshuva in the name of the Ben Ish Chai, that even people who write a prosbul, sometimes after they write the prosbul, they lend money, a small amount of money, just so that they could practice Shemitah Sksaf. So when the person when they come collect the money, the person will say that I don't owe you the money mishamit anilach, right? Just to practice shmitas ksafim that they should just have some token of the original halacha of Zevin and Orla Halacha. Lara Halacha says even if you're going to observe heter mechira, you're going to rely on heter mechira for shmita, you should still leave a little corner of the field that you don't do anything with in shmita. Just keep even when you work an end around on the halacha, keep something as something do with the halacha, but that's essentially how it works, and that's the way that all of the contemporary poskim suggest Yerusha should work. So those of you who are Bukhar, who have big plans for the future, you should promptly give up those plans and make sure that Shalom prevails.